have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs on Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
First, I need that national champion.
So welcome on in, everyone, to the Illini Boardroom. Coming off a huge win against Duke at Cameron Indoor, we are joined here post-game by a very special guest. We have the 1989 Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, former NBA player, Flying Illini, current BTN analyst. We have the one, the only, Stephen Bardo. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us here this evening. Let's get right on into it. Let's just talk about the game, your first impressions. What are you thinking here minutes after the game ended?
I was really impressed with the poise that the Illini played with. They knew they would get pressured defensively, and they were very strong with the basketball. They had a few more turnovers than they would like, but that was after they had the game under control. And so once they established that double-digit lead in the first half, they never really relinquished it. So very impressive performance by the Illini wire to wire.
Definitely. Totally agree.
Yeah, Steven, one thing that I liked from our team was it was a really balanced approach. So we saw seven guys score 9 points or more, no one scoring more than 18. Does that kind of remind you of your 89 team and that lot of balance, a lot of different options out there?
It does remind me of our team, but in this way, this year's version of the Fighting Illini, I think they have guys that can step up and hit you for 28, but then they can have nights where you just mentioned the really good balance offensively. And I think they're learning how to attack different systems on the offensive end because they have a lot more weapons. They have a lot more ways that they can attack you. And so they kind of, you know, they came out of the gate just on fire against Duke and never really let up. I mean, when you look at Io DeSumo, he went 6 of 18 against Baylor. He goes 6 of 11 tonight, but he has 12 rebounds. And so this team is figuring out different ways to win games.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was actually Io's most rebounds in a game. So you were kind of talking also about the different ways that they attacked. This was kind of a reapproach towards last year where Georgie and Kofi had a lot of time on the floor together. What do you think went into that tonight?
Well, I think they knew that they could take advantage of the front line of Duke, the inexperience. I think the high-low action that Illinois likes to play when those two are involved, I think it was a nice move. It was a nice counter move to the quickness. Hurt is a heck of a player. I mean, Duke's got some great players, great young talent. They didn't have the size, I didn't think, at the beginning of the game to match up with Georgie nor Kofi, and that's why I thought the Illini could win by double digits.
So, Stephen, you said, going to your point about the Illini winning double digits, you'd actually said, we saw in Bardo's breakdown, you were predicting the Illini to win. Did this game kind of go how you expected, and did it change your perception at all of how you feel about the Illini?
Good question. It's obviously a big win anytime you can win at Duke. I don't care if the Cameron crazies are in there or not. That's a big win. I just think it shows the maturity of this Illini team. They have a lot of work left to do because the Big Ten is going to be a gauntlet, and you're seeing that games are being canceled. So a team may only get 20 games before going into a possible Big Ten conference tournament, if there is one, or just going right into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to take advantage of every single game. You don't know if a game is going to be taken away or postponed or canceled. You know, you talked about that Big Ten gauntlet. Before Illinois quite gets into that Big Ten gauntlet, they have one more test, you know, bragging rights this upcoming Saturday. Obviously, we're all expecting a win after now, but how do you sort of see the matchup, this Saturday with Mizzou?
it's going to be interesting because, you know, last year Mizzou did a good job and they are have majority of their guys back and Mark Smith's playing with a lot of confidence. So it's going to be interesting. They've gotten off to their best start, I believe, in might be 15 years, something like that. They'll have a lot of confidence coming to the game and it'll be a typical border war situation. I think Illinois is going to have the more talent most games that they enter this season. Mm-hmm. It's whether they can get to put their guys in position to be successful or not.
Sure.
That's typically the key. Kofi's going to have a physical advantage over most people that he sees. So can Illinois put him in position to be successful? Can Io get downhill and show that he can shoot pull-up jumpers with his off his left hand bounce? If he can do that consistently, he'll be very difficult to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. That Tillman-Kofi matchup is absolutely going to be appointment television. Two of the best bigs that we've seen in a while.
No doubt about it.
So, Steven, you're obviously a Big Ten analyst and commentator. Is it ever hard to kind of take that analyst hat or put it on while you're still like a former Illini player and maybe in the back of your head, it's maybe difficult to separate the two sometimes?
Does it sound like it?
It doesn't. It really doesn't. You do a great job.
We did hear Jay Bias tonight, but it doesn't sound it like when you come on the mic.
No, because you know what, guys? I've been blessed with the ability to be a true analyst. Mm-hmm. Like, I can analyze my two sons, honestly. And, you know, I've been able to put the bias aside. Obviously, I want the Illini program to do well each and every time they go out. Sure. That's obvious. Mm-hmm. But I also have a job to do, and those other programs that are represented on the telecast, they need to be represented equally as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not fair to be an Illini grad and pull for the Illini and have my analysts, you know, my breakdown or whatever I do lean and slant in favor of Illinois. That's just not fair to the viewer. So, mm-hmm. I try to keep that in mind, that the integrity of the broadcast is always the most important thing.
Yeah, and how would you say, comparing and contrasting the differences between being on TV as like a BTN analyst versus when you called radio games with Barnhart on as like a color commentator?
That's a really good distinction that you bring up, because when you're on the radio, you're expected to be, you know, someone that roots for the home team. That's an expectation, because that's a older medium, it's an older, more intimate platform that sports fans that were my dad's age and even my age, I love radio. And so it's an older platform. And so people expect you to be more like that. But on television, you need to be down the middle. Even on the Big Ten Network, when it's a Big Ten team, like, say, for example, Penn State versus Seton Hall the other night, and Penn State goes up 19 in the first half, and then they lose in overtime. And, you know, I have to point out certain things that Penn State didn't do very well. And I have to be able to do that because that's what the game calls for. Mm-hmm. I'm just calling the game. I'm calling what I see. And that's how I stay as much of an analyst, even when I'm calling Illinois games, as I've been able to do.
Sure. And I've always wondered, as a broadcaster, is it challenging for you to sort of memorize all the names of some of these players, these coaches? Maybe not for Big Ten teams, but like, I think you've got like a UMKC game against someone coming up here, a random opponent. Is it ever challenging to sort of memorize all those names and players and coaches? Kind of what's the strategy behind that?
It is tough to memorize, and I don't even try to memorize those schools. I have my boards that I'm able to study. You can watch game film typically on any team in Division I now. So I watch game film. I hear the toughest thing a lot of times is name pronunciations.
Bishanashvili.
Yes. Or Mamu Kelishvili.
Yes, who is the Seton Hall guy. Yeah.
Man, he's a great player, mm-hmm. and you got to get his name right, or you lose credibility. So
sure,
I think the boards are important. I think you doing research and seeing the teams play on, you know, previous games really helps.
Sure. Definitely. Do you ever get late night texts from Andy Katz about how excited he is about the Illini?
No, I don't get texts. He used to do that. And then we had an agreement where, you know, we'll keep it during business hours.
gotta set boundaries.
I love Andy though, man. Cause you know what? The dude grinds.
Yeah, he definitely does. Saying? Definitely does.
And he got to where he is because he worked his tail off. So I always respect that.
Well, we love Andy Katz because he loves the Illini. I mean, in the offseason, he just kept bringing us up that, you know, power 36 or whatever it is. And we're like in the top 10, in the top 5. And so we absolutely love Andy Katz because he just loves the Illini.
Well, you know where he went to school, right?
Wisconsin.
Exactly. Hmm. He's a Badger. So he's a Big Ten guy. So he's naturally going to want all the Big Ten programs to do well.
Sure.
In addition to his Badgers. But he's a guy that's been very good at what he does as well, in terms of you would not know that he's a Badger because he tries to call things straight up.
Definitely.
Steven, I want to read you this quote from a media member the day Brad Underwood was hired. So he said, "It may not come next year. It may not come in 3 years, but maybe 4 or 5. You might be looking at Illinois in this situation where they can contend for a Big Ten championship and even a national championship." Do you know who said that?
Was it me?
Yes, it was. In year 4, here we are potentially competing for a Big Ten championship and a national championship.
And that's got to excite the fans, as you said. I remember watching that press conference and watching you in that say that quote in that like post-game little press conference there. And I was like, I mean, did you guys think that was like a real possibility? You know, I was a little skeptical, you know, coming off of John Gross, and especially because we're recent grads, and so we've only seen non-tournament teams. We hadn't seen any success. And as I'm watching you say that, I'm like, is that for real? Do we really think that we can do this? And here we are 4 or 5 years later, actually in that position after a Duke win. And I just think it's amazing that we're actually in that position now. And your prediction kind of hopefully came to light.
Well, I think that Brad Underwood is easy to predict because he's had success everywhere he's been. And when you have a guy that's been an assistant coach at Western Illinois for 9 years, think about that for a second. He was in Macomb, Illinois for 9 years, watching the Illini dominate the state, be a contender in the Big Ten. I mean, he's seen what the program can be when it's rolling. And he knows the formula. He's getting Chicago people. He's getting people from around the country. He knows the formula. So it was only a matter of time, if he got the time, to be able to turn the program around. Also, with his staff that he hired, you could tell that, you know, his staff knows exactly what they're doing and who they're targeting, the relationships that they have. It was just a matter of time.
Yeah, what I think we didn't predict, though, was just how he was able to switch up the offense and defensive strategies really on the fly, which was super impressive, going from the spread and the high pressure to more ball screens. So just testament to him for really switching it up and putting us in the right position.
I agree. I think that's what separates the pretty good coaches with the really good coaches in college basketball, are those that can adjust their systems to their personnel. And then, you know, he gets in the Big Ten and maybe he sees, you know what, in this conference, it's probably not a good idea to try to go all out denial because these teams are too good. They're too veteran. Big Ten's an older league compared to some of the other Power Five conferences. And so to see a coach be able to adjust the way he plays, the way he recruits to where he is a testament to Brad and his ability to coach. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of the Big Ten being an older conference, obviously this was a Duke team with a lot of new guys. Do you think this a game like this would look a lot different between these two teams in a few months from now? And do you think that kind of gives an advantage to some of these younger teams who may not be as experienced?
Well, it's a different year because a lot of times that would have been a much tougher game to win because that place would have been nuts. There would have been fans on top of fans. It's a much different scenario. And so can teams bring their own energy in these venues where there's nobody there. That makes a big, big difference. So, yeah, they'll be better, but will they be able to ride a home court advantage on a critical game to get them a 3 seed as opposed to a 5 seed? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's a different year, and so it's hard to tell exactly where Duke will project based on the experiences that they would have at Cameron and then having to go to North Carolina, Florida State, Virginia, Syracuse. It's just a different year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going into the Big Ten, do you have maybe like a record prediction or a place prediction where you see this team falling?
No, I think that the winners will probably have 5 or 6 losses. And I think when I say winners, I mean the co-Big Ten champions, because it could be 3 or 4 teams this year like it was last year. You know, it could be co-champions like it was last season. Just because Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan State, there'll be 2 more teams. Rutgers, who I think looked very good against Syracuse tonight.
Yes, they did, against Alan Griffin. You love to see it.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, you'll see a couple more Big Ten teams that will elevate. Ohio State looks really good to a high level, and they'll start to cannibalize each other at some point. Right. And then the top will separate itself.
So the new rivalry that was born last year was with Iowa. Can you kind of go through how Illinois, I guess, matches with them this year? Because we saw tonight that Iowa pretty much like ran away at the end of the game against UNC tonight. Do you kind of have any, like, you want to go through how they Illinois matches up with them?
You said a new rivalry. Is that what you,
well,
you,
for,
didn't,
all right,
you didn't recognize, you, need, you said
you
it,
need,
right?
You need to understand where we're coming from. We went to school from 2014 to 2018, so we didn't really have successful basketball teams. So when we saw the games last year, we're like, oh, we hate this team so much more than we used to. I mean, we hated them. We hated them throughout our whole college experience, but it was still not as to the level it was last year. But yes, I guess it's not a new rivalry.
Okay, that's fair. Iowa was one of the 2 places that I never won on the road in the Big Ten. We hated each other. We hated each other. We didn't hate each other off the court, but on the court, we hated each other. And so that's just a renewal of the blood that exists between Illinois and Iowa for decades. And it's a healthy rivalry. And so this year, Iowa's got some really good young talent that Fran doesn't seem quite comfortable enough yet to really rely on, but he's going to have to at some point because the rigors of the Big Ten, everybody's going to have to be able to go at least 8 deep because the conference is just it's too deep. It's too competitive.
Definitely.
Penn State, I don't know if you guys saw what they did to Virginia Tech.
Their biggest win against a ranked opponent ever, I think. They won by 20 tonight. Yeah.
After coming off, like, giving the game away to Seton Hall at home in overtime. So that's just an example of how difficult the league is going to be this season. And you're going to have to develop depth.
Definitely. Okay, so you went through how you played against Iowa during your career. You want to talk about the Mizzou rivalry? Because it is, we branded our podcast and our last podcast episode as Hate Week. Do you want to go through on how much you hated Mizzou?
Yeah, I didn't hate Mizzou because we were undefeated.
Oh, true.
It can't be a rivalry, you know, if you win every time.
I never lost in Mizzou. Yeah, so it was, you know, and I was cool with all the guys. Byron Irvin, who was a Julian High School, the Irvin family. Here in Chicago, he was a NBA player. He's an NBA agent now. Doug Smith, who I was a teammate with in the Dallas Mavericks, played for Missouri. So I've got some, you know, really cool cats that I was tight with from them. But we did well against Missouri. And that rivalry is always a great game, regardless of who's ranked and who's not or what the records are. It just so happens that both teams would be coming in playing very, very well. And so I think it's a great matchup. Tillman and Kofi Coburn ought to be fantastic. I think Mark Smith and Io DeSumo, if they are to lock horns, will be very interesting. So, you know, I think I look forward to it. It's going to be a very competitive game.
Yeah, you kind of alluded to just the rivalries between the different teams when you were playing out there. How well did you know the other players in the Big Ten, whether it was playing in high school or just really your time in college?
A lot of times we knew the guys from high school because they'd go to the BC All-Star camps in Rensselaer or the five-star camps out in Pittsburgh or the Nike All-American camp on the campus of Princeton, which I was fortunate enough to attend. So you get to know guys who are in the top 100 for the most part. AAU was around, but it wasn't as big as the All-American shoe camps, so to speak. So we knew who they were and played against them. And, you know, it was always fun, though. Always a lot of fun. And, you know, to have some regional pride and to be able to represent the state of Illinois was always fun.
Yeah, and just kind of talking through those camps, is that how you kind of had a bond with some of those guys who were in your recruiting class? So looking at a Kendall Gill or a Nick Anderson, did you guys kind of become friends there and then all say, hey, let's go to Illinois together?
Funny story, five of us were in the Nike All-American camp, and we just thought that it would be pretty cool if we all went to Illinois because Nick could have gone to Louisville, Syracuse, Marcus could have gone to Syracuse, Lowell could have gone anywhere in the country. He's the number one high school player in the country. Kenny Battle was an All-American freshman at Northern Illinois University. He could have gone anywhere, but all these guys chose to go to Illinois. And Kendall was the lowest ranked recruit that we had. Larry Smith was ranked higher than Kendall.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because what Kendall was he, 140 pounds back then?
Yeah, he's like 160 pounds, you know, coming out of high school. But he worked his tail off and became number five pick in the NBA draft. So, you know, we had an outstanding crew. And a lot of us were in that Nike All-American camp. And we thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool if everybody kept their word. And we went to Illinois and everybody did.
Definitely. Okay, so we have one question from a huge fan of yours. His name is Tyler Cottingham. He was wondering, who does the best Lou Henson impersonation from the 1989 team?
Tyler Cottingham was my teammate.
Yeah, we know, we know.
We reached out to Tyler.
He wasn't a fan. He was my teammate.
I know.
Yeah, we're just giving him a hard time.
Okay. Who was the funniest of the team?
Well, who gave the best Lou Henson impersonation, or who was the funniest on the team?
Probably Irvin Small. Yeah,
interesting.
Easy E. Yeah, he did a good Lou imitation, and he'd get us going with the hip hop chants that we used to do before the game.
Yeah, we talked to Tyler the other day about his experiences, you know, as a walk on that team, and just as basically, you know, he even considered himself in a way like a fan that got to walk on. And so hearing his experiences about the 89 team was so awesome. Thank you so much, Steven. You know, we want to just wrap up with one final question. You know, you played on a Final Four team. Every team that you played on finished inside the top 20. When we look back at the end of the season, where the chips fall, where they may fall, do you think this is a Final Four team? Where do you think this team stands at the end of the day?
Oh, they definitely have Final Four material because, you know, they've got pros on the team. And when you got multiple pros, that's a different scenario. They can take over the game at different times down the stretch. They've already played the second best team in the country in Baylor that could arguably be the best team in the country. They went toe-to-toe for a long period of time. They just went to Duke and controlled that game double figures for 25 minutes of that game on the road. So they have the potential to do, you know, they can win a national championship.
Wow. Just even hearing those words, it's again, it just takes me back to like when you said it might not be in 3 years or 4 years and 5 years, but you know, here we are in year four and it really could happen. Thank you so much, Steven, for taking the time to talk to us. You can find him on BTN. You can find him on Bardo's Breakdowns. Anywhere else that we can find Steven Bardo that you want to let the people know if they should be looking out somewhere for you?
No, that's good. Bardo's Breakdown. That's good.
Awesome. Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much, Steven. We look forward to seeing you on the call here in some good Big Ten basketball games here in the season. And thank you so much.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Steven.
All right.
All right.
All right, that was absolutely awesome. Again, huge thanks to Steven Bardo for joining us here this evening. It's late. He still came onto the podcast to discuss a huge win. We got a couple minutes here. Let's just go really quick takeaways, thoughts, anything that we have about this game.
Well, I'm psyched. I mean, we can quickly update our Illinois basketball rankings if we want to.
In terms of like our favorite memories.
Our favorite memories.
I can't remember number one. I can't seem to remember what number one is. It might be a win in
beating
Cameron Indoor.
Beating yeah. 15 yeah. on the road. Who cares? While the refs are still trying to give them the game.
A little 8-on-5 basketball to win.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's number two then? If this is number one, which it's almost like sad that this is number one in a sense that it took this long. I'm not taking away anything from this win. It was an awesome win. But it's like, this is number one, but what is number two?
Probably Iowa, yeah. Right before to clinch a double bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michigan, our freshman year, 2014, was fun, but we weren't even ranked.
It didn't really mean much.
We didn't make the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, we were at Michigan State when Iowa hit, well, the it was Dan Dockett shot.
That one was better on TV, I heard.
No. Being there was a lot more fun.
hearing Dan Dockett, it's just an experience you can't get anywhere else.
All the people running on the court, it's a hazard.
Yeah, that's true.
The COVID.
Right.
Speaking of announcers, though, I did appreciate Jay Billis sometimes calling out the refs today and saying, like, that is just not a charge.
Yeah.
Like,
there was one time when he called out, like, Illinois foul that wasn't called, and he was like, that's just like, that's such a foul. And he didn't do the same for Illinois. He did say the refs were bad, but like, he didn't do the classic, like, flip it on Iowa. I mean, Duke.
A little Freudian slip there as we get into Big Ten play.
They get the calls too.
Yeah, they do get the calls here.
As far as like alumni announcers, I would say Jay Billis is like, he's on a pretty good side. Whereas like
where
Dan
does he
Dockett,
rank to like Kirk Herbstreit if we're looking at the big revenue sports announcers?
Oh, Kirk is a pro. Kirk won't even pick on College Game Day if he's calling a game.
Hmm. You know who also is pretty low? Steven Bardo. Very biased.
We like Steven Bardo around here. Absolutely.
All right, I'll just do it for everyone. I even called it a little bit his freshman year, but then he put on the Rutgers show. But I was very against Georgie last year. Just didn't like his antics when it didn't match up to the play that he gave us. So I will take the fall for all of the fans out there for Georgie. He does look like he does belong in our lineup in the rotation.
Rustafi will remember this.
And just credit to him for turning it around. I know it's only been two games where we've seen it, but it was two national stage games where he's played like he belongs, and that's definitely something that we can be excited about.
Especially, and again, I don't want to go too much in analysis here, but we do just have to touch on the Georgie Kofi lineup at the same time that
it finally worked.
Right, that he's actually producing when he's at the four.
I think I'm still going to be nervous every single time that they're out there until they can like consistently prove me wrong. It's been two games. Well, it's been this game and it worked. Let's hopefully it works come Mizzou and come Big Ten play.
Yeah, I mean, he just seems like mentally mature. You know, maybe his early years, he's making some mistakes on the offensive end, whether it's fouls or moving picks. So it's good to see that. And then also it helps when you have a magician like Andre Curbelo to just really
the turnover
like
magician.
Slice. Make the turnovers
no, but
disappear.
He slices and dices defense is in a way that he can get guys open looks. And you saw that with the Georgie dunk and you saw other dunks too. So that was really fun to watch is you finally have someone who can really dissect a defense, which you miss from Andres Feliz. Curbelo's really been able to provide that.
One Xanax pill. That's all we need.
Chill a little bit, Andre.
Do you guys see Brad during one of the timeouts? He goes, what are you doing to Curbelo? Which, look, you gotta spend money to make money. You gotta try to turn the ball over sometimes to make plays happen. But we gotta hang some banners, I think. So if you want to tweet at Boardroom, I know there's gonna be some spicy takes about where this team's gonna go. I'd love to see some banners, maybe some tattoo bets or whatnot here.
I didn't look at all the ones that I asked for banners at halftime. Someone did make the very obvious statement, Illinois is beating Duke. Thank you for that response.
Yeah, we'll hang that. Were there any Kofi needs receiving gloves banners? You can have
no,
that.
No, that's yours.
Okay.
Sam Go Cubs Go is going to own that one.
Got it.
Yeah, and I mean, what's crazy is like I feel my banner is we had a B-minus performance and still beat Duke by 15 at Cameron.
Is that going to fit on the graphic?
We have a ceiling. We have a ceiling, boys.
Is that in what? Is that one sentence or?
I don't know. I'll get some.
It's a run on. It's a run on. Okay, we're thrilled about this win. Let's get out of here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Illini Boardroom, ladies and gentlemen. I-L-L.
I-N-I. I-N-I.